I want to just take a few seconds, literally a minute or two, to go back over the last 3 weeks. I know everyone groans when someone says that, but I would regard what I've said in the last three sermons as being pivotal if you want to understand your place as a Christian and for us to understand who we are as a church. And we looked at the way in which Samuel came to anoint David as king of Israel. And we spent time trying to understand what it looks like to be a priest, and that we are called to be priests. We are a royal priesthood, and we are chosen for that task. We are chosen to represent God wherever we go. It's not only in meetings and in places with other Christians. Fundamentally, we incarnate who Jesus is by the way in which we represent him wherever we go. And that's what we looked at in the first week. The second week, we looked at what it meant to be a king, a ruler. And we came to this conclusion that to rule as the children of God, as those who are anointed of God, and that's what it means, you're anointed as a king. You are anointed, you are given the power of the Holy Spirit in order that you may serve wherever you are. And then last week we looked at the issue of what it means to be a prophet. And what we said was that, yes, prophecy is a thing of saying, this is what God is saying to you now or saying to the church now. But essentially, a prophet is somebody who by their lifestyle, by the way that they live, criticizes the current reality, but lives a new reality for people to see. We had a very good image of that in South Africa when all the media, we were told how dangerous and threatening Nelson Mandela was. When he came out of prison, he lived forgiveness. And he and Bishop Tutu together turned what was a potentially volatile and hostile situation, a violent situation, on its head, because they both lived what it meant to be forgiving people. And I think that's the issue. As Christians, we are prophetic in the way that we live. And that's what it means to see the kingdom come, to incarnate, to be servants, to be the ones who actually represent Jesus in this way, in the world that we live in, amongst the people that we know. So that's the background for today. And then I want to read Romans 12. Last week, we looked at Romans 12, 1 and 2, and we read it both in the NIV and in the Message. Now I want to go to the other end of Romans 12, the last few verses, because this morning we're going to look at Jonathan and David. It's 1 Samuel 18, 19, and 20. And it's this whole relationship that David has with Jonathan and what it means to him. So Romans 12, 17 says this: "Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friend, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, 'It is mine to avenge, I will repay,' says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. If he is doing this, in doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head." Now that's not the motivation to do it. You better be careful. "Do not be overcome by evil." Here's the point. "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." The Message is also a really good expression of this. He says in verse 17, "Don't hit back. Discover beauty in everyone. If you've got it in you, get along with everybody. Don't insist on getting even. That's not for you to do. I'll do the judging, says God. I'll take care of it. Our scriptures tell us that if you see your enemy hungry, go buy that person lunch. Or if he's thirsty, get him a drink. Your generosity will surprise him with goodness. Don't let evil get the best of you. Get the best of evil by doing good." Two other verses. the beginning of the whole passage of Jonathan and David and Saul starts off like this. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. And then in verse 13, no, where is it? Oh, here we are. It's verse 10. End of verse 10, it says, while David was playing the guitar, as he usually did, Saul had a spear in his hand. I'll pin David to the wall, he said to himself as he hurled it. But David eluded him twice. Not everybody likes you. Did you know that?
Really?
Well, I found out anyway. We have this almost unspoken assumption that things should be going well with us if we follow God. But when we decide to follow Jesus, we enter into a world of hostility. Conflict is actually a baseline for every single Christian. If you have no conflict in your life, then you need to step back a second and ask why. Because we almost want there to be no conflict. But if you are a Christian, if you are a follower of Jesus, you will inevitably be in a position of conflict. Because you come to a situation at which you are at odds with the darkness of the world. The death, the sin, the destruction, the suffering. And when you come into a head-on confrontation with those things, you will find that there is conflict. You will find yourself in a situation where not everybody has an excellent attitude towards you. That's why I read the Romans passage. And David is anointed. All the stuff I just said about David, and he comes and he deals with Goliath. I mean, Israel was going to be made slaves to the Philistines if Goliath hadn't been dealt with. The previous chapter, last week, we looked at Goliath, and Goliath comes in and dominates the scene, intimidates and controls everything that's going on in the minds of Saul and all of Israel. He is the dominant factor. And along comes David, and we know the story. And everyone celebrates. And you would think at that point, things are going swimmingly for David. And we'll come back to the Jonathan thing in a second. But Saul begins to see David as a threat. And we'll get a glimpse of it this morning, hopefully. I'm not going to spend ages on this. But you see a process in which Saul gets worse and worse and worse. Every time he succumbs to his desire to rid himself of David, he becomes smaller and smaller as a human. His understanding of God diminishes. And all David is doing is what God has anointed and called him to do. And you will find, I guarantee you will find that if you are doing what God has called you to do, you will come into confrontation with the dark forces that are arrayed against us. And Paul writes to the Ephesian church, says, we don't wrestle against human beings. We are wrestling against all the dark forces that are arrayed against us. And yes, they are defeated on the cross. But the consummation of that, the fulfillment of the victory of Jesus, has not yet fully taken place. They're still mopping up to do, and that's what we do. And so David begins to experience Saul's hatred and his hostility. What I read to you from verse 10 and 11 is just the first incident, because there are 16 attempts that Saul makes on David's life. Did I say 16? I don't know why I said 16. Six. David is coming and he's soothing Saul. He's soothing Saul with his guitar playing. And Saul's instinct is to get rid of David. And he takes a spear. On this attempt, on this occasion, he has two attempts to pin him to the wall. The second attempt is more calculating. He puts David into the front line and hopes that in the battle with all the Philistines and all the others that he's going to be exposed. And then there's another one where he plots and he says, you can have Michal, his daughter, you can get married to her as long as you bring me the foreskins of 100 Philistines. The idea being that you've got to come into battle with 100 hairy Philistines, and hopefully one of them will get the better of him. That's what the thinking was. Then there's another spear incident that comes after that. And then he sends assassins to David. That's the funniest one, because he sends assassins to the house where David is. And what's her name? Michal says, he's not feeling well. He's asleep. Can you come back later? And they do. I just think, at least there's a code of ethics with these assassins. You don't assassinate someone when they're sick. David is doing absolutely everything right. He's playing. He's being anointed as king. He's killed the giant. He's killed the Philistines. He's done everything asked of him. He is in the right. How unjust is this? We get our nose out of joint if we're doing stuff that is good and right and something happens to go against us. David is just what Saul needed. He is just what the nation needed. He's doing everything right, but he's constantly almost killed for it. And when you get to chapter 20 in 1 Samuel, David goes and knocks on Jonathan's door and he says, tell me, what am I doing wrong? What's going on here? David is sustained by his friendship with Jonathan. We will come into situations where there will be constant conflict, where there will be difficulties that we face because of our faith or just because we are Christians. What we need one another. We need, and that's what the church is, we need one another to sustain the long obedience in the same direction. We need a Jonathan. We need someone like Moses when he was out there. It was the lectionary reading I had on Thursday or Friday. Was that Moses stands out there and the battle goes for them while Hur and, what's his name, were holding his arms up. We need a Jonathan. We need to be encouraged for the long haul, to persevere. How many people, I mean, it's a term that I dislike intensely, but how many people do you know who have backslidden, who have followed Jesus at some stage and have just slipped back into a place where they are lukewarm at the best or cold, even worse? Well, I'm not sure if it's worse if you read Revelation. But the point is that fire has gone out for them because there's been a process of suffering and difficulty. And there's almost this expectation in the church that unless everything is going swimmingly, God is not blessing you and he's not with you. God was with David through this whole process. And the point that I wanted to make was that Jonathan helps to keep him focused on what he's been called to do. We need constant reminder by the people around us of what we are chosen and anointed to do. That's why I reiterated some of the stuff we've looked at over the last few weeks. Conflict is normal. But we need more than just our own willpower to get us through all the stuff that's going to get chucked at us. Not only do we need God, but we need each other. And that's what Jonathan did. The other sort of erroneous assumption I think that we have as Christians is that if we do good, if we are doing what we are supposed to do, then we should get rewarded for it somehow. We should actually become prosperous or blessed. And we always define those things in concrete terms. Now, I'm not going to go into that in detail this morning, but I want to say that no matter what happens, you are called, you are chosen, you are anointed. Nothing changes that. And you are called to live in a way that Paul writes to the Roman church and he says, don't repay evil for evil. Because what happened with Saul is every time there was the spear, there was all these different attempts on David's life, little by little, his life is diminished. The light starts to go out. The temptation for us would be, well, let's take matters into our own hands now, because I am the one who is anointed. Samuel came all the way to my dad's house, and he waited until I was anointed as king of Israel. Now, the way that Saul is behaving makes him illegitimate. Therefore, let me take things into my own hands, whatever that looks like. But each time Saul attempts to snuff out David's life, David does not retaliate. And remember when we did the introductory thing on David, the passage that we looked at was when he's in the cave with his men and Saul comes into the cave mouth to squat. And he puts his cloak aside and David goes and cuts the edge of his cloak off. And when Saul's gone out, he comes and he says, look, he's basically saying, I mean you no harm. Your life was in my hands, but that's not my place. It's not my place to return evil for evil. In the right time, David becomes king. But I want us to see from this passage here, chapter 18, 19, and 20, that it's not for us. We have within our hands the choice of how we respond to things. You choose. When things are going against you, when you're swimming upstream, when all kinds of difficulty and even suffering is happening, you choose. You're not a victim. And to be honest, it's one of the hardest things to do. Because each time we choose to do good for evil, as it says at the end of Romans, each time we do that, a little bit more of who God is becomes what we are. Every time we react badly and we do what is wrong, it creates difficulties for us. And you have a really large contrast in these three chapters between the way that Saul behaves as the anointed king and how David behaves as the anointed king. You choose. You choose what it's going to look like and how it's going to be the way that you respond. And you don't have to go far, guys. As I'm speaking, you are all able to put this in context of where you are. There are nasty people around, and there are a range of different things that are happening around us and to us. Let me just say this. David is faced with an exterior threat on many occasions. When he's out looking after the sheep, it's the lion and the bear, then it's Goliath, then it's all the Philistines. Those are things out there that are coming at him that he's got to deal with. The more difficult thing is the thing that is right close to him. The man that he is serving, the man that he is caring for, his best friend's father. The stuff that is blatant and in your face and out there, those external things, those are not the real difficulties. The stuff that we struggle with and grapple with is the darkness that we face within us, and the stuff that we know that that we grapple with in terms of our own humanity and our own broken fallenness. Can say lots and lots more about this, but let me just say this. You choose. And let me just, last thing before I read this again. We are easily tainted with, what's the word I want? We will moan at the drop of a hat. Whether it's about the weather or something more substantial, we are skilled at moaning. Because we have expectations, we have assumptions. What's the word I'm looking for? When you think that you deserve it, what's the word? Entitlement. There's an entitlement that we have, that we think this should be. And so I want us to be clear that this is the field in which we are operating. It's a conflict. And Paul's clear about that whenever he writes. And I want to read this in conclusion again. Read it twice. Do not repay evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. And then in a more conversational way, this is how the message puts it. Don't hit back. Discover beauty in everyone. If you've got it in you, get along with everyone. Don't insist on getting even. That's not for you to do. I'll do the judging, says God. I'll take care of it. Our scriptures tell us that if you see your enemy hungry, go buy that person lunch. Or if he's thirsty, get him a drink. Your generosity will surprise him with goodness. Don't let evil get the best of you. Get the best of evil by doing good.